Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're continuing to read in the fifth canto in verses in prose, and although it's on the board, I think it's very difficult to chant it all together, and I think we just don't do that. So it is the fifth canto, chapter 19, entitled The Island of Jambudvip, text number 20. Yosu Bhagavati Sarvabhutatmanyatmanye Niruktanilayane Paratmani Vasudevinanya Nimitta Bhakti Yoga Lakshano Nanagate Nimitta Vidya Granti Randana Dvare Niyadehi Mahapurusha Purusha Prasangaha Yaha. Anyone who? Aso. That. Bhagavati. Unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sarva-bhutat-mani, the Supersoul of all living entities. Anatmye, having no attachment. Anirukte, who's beyond the mind and speech. Anilayane, not dependent on anything else. Parama Atmani, unto the Supreme Soul. Vasudeve, Lord Vasudev, the Son of Vasudev. Ananya, without any other. Nimitta, cause. Bhakti Yoga Lakshana, having symptoms of pure devotional service. Nanagati, of varied destinations. Nimitta, the cause. Avidya Granti, the abundance of ignorance. Randana, of cutting. Dvarena, by means. Yada, when. He, indeed. Mahapurusha, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purusha, with the devotee. Prasanga, an intimate relationship. Translation. After many, many births, when the result of one's pious activities mature, one gets an opportunity to associate with pure devotees. Then one is able to cut the knot of bondage to ignorance, which bound him because of varied fruitive activities. As a result of associating with devotees, one gradually renders service to Lord Vasudev, who is transcendental, free from attachment to the material world, beyond the mind and words, and independent of everything else. That bhakti yoga, devotional service to Lord Vasudev, is the real path of liberation. Brahman realization is the beginning of liberation, and Paramatma realization is still further advancement toward the realm of liberation. But one achieves real liberation when he understands his position as an eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mukti vidvanyata rupan sarupena vyavastiti. In the material world, in the bodily concept of life, everyone is working in the wrong direction. When one becomes Brahma-bhuta, spiritually realized, one understands that he's not the body and that working in the bodily concept of life is useless and misdirected. Then his devotional service begins. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 18:54, Brahma-bhuta prasanatmana sushatina kangsati sama service bhuti sumar bhakti nabhate param. One who is thus transcendentally situated realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments or desires to have anything. He's equally disposed to every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. Devotional service is actual liberation. When one is attracted by the beauty of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his mind is always engaged at the Lord's lotus feet, he's no longer interested in subjects that do not help him in self-realization. In other words, he loses all attraction for material activities. In the Taittiriya Upanishad, it is said, living entity becomes established in spiritual, blissful life when he fully understands that his happiness depends on spiritual self-realization, which is the basic principle of ananda, bliss. And when he's eternally situated in the service of the Lord, he has no other Lord above him. Om Ajnanati Mirandasya Ganana Silakya Sakshuri Militam Yena Tasmai Sigurive Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Stavitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupakya Dhamiyam Dadati Svapadantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Dvaita Gadadhara Sri Vasudevi Gaura Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So after many, many births, when the results of one's pious activities mature, one gets an opportunity to associate with pure devotees. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find a description about karma unmukhi sukriti, moksha unmukhi sukriti, and bhakti unmukhi sukriti. Karma unmukhi sukriti meaning pious activities that result in good material conditions. Moksha unmukhi sukriti, the result of pious activities which grants us liberation from material existence. And finally, bhakti unmukhi sukriti, that is that kind of pious activities which can grant us the benefit of pure devotional service. In other words, the other two types of pious activities, karma mukhi and moksha mukhi, cannot grant us bhakti. So, because bhakti, bhakchaman, vijanati, yavanyas chasvitatvataha, that devotional service can only come from devotional service. Therefore, devotional service begins by accidentally engaging in devotional service, or by unknowingly engaging in devotional service by the arrangement of the Vaishnavas and the Supreme Lord. And then this agyata sukriti, this unknown spiritual benefit, as that is accumulating and building up, then it will result in consciously taking up devotional service. In that way, pious activity, when they mature, the agyata sukriti of the bhakti unmukhi, when that matures, yes, then we can take up pure devotional service and we may come into the association of devotees who are committed to pure devotional service. In the fourth canto of Bhagavatam, in the narration of Dhruva Maharaj, we have that verse, akama sarva kama va moksha kama udaridi tivrena bhakti yogena yayeta purusham param. And it is said that whether one has material desires or whether one doesn't have material desires, one must with great force engage in pure devotional service. So we're speaking about those devotees that are committed to the process of pure devotional service. Whether they have some material desires or not, that is not very important. That is considered of a secondary importance, because very quickly, whatever material contamination will be there, that will be removed. And therefore, it's not very important. As one says, that when a log of wood is burning, one doesn't spend much time discussing the cracks in the wood and the holes in the wood, because the wood will soon be ashes. So what's the point, you know? And ashes have no holes and cracks. So therefore, we're not so concerned with these remaining material contaminations, as long as a person is dedicated to the pure process of devotional service and is on the path of pure devotional service. That, of course, particularly through initiation, is fixed, because there the sinful activities are given up, and the positive process of chanting Hare Krishna and all the types of devotional service are taken up. Srila Rupa Goswami is describing in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu how Sarvopadi Vinir Mukta Tatparatvina Nirmalam Rishikesha Rishikesha Sevanam Bhaktir Uchanam, that one must engage the senses in the service of the Lord. And if one simply engages these senses in the service of the owner of the senses, then everything then the material situation becomes transcended. Although one is working within the material world, and although one is using the material energy, at that point, the same material energy that was before entangling us, and more entangling us, as we find in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that Ashwatthama, that banyan tree, which has Adasakhen Upariyada, which has the roots upwards and the branches downwards. And then we see a huge entanglement of branches and roots, and one can no longer trace out where it all began or how it all began. And that represents material life and material entanglement. But one must cut at the root. If one cuts that tree at the root, then one can actually become free from that entanglement. So the root begins with the tendency to enjoy the material world. Iccha dvesa samuttena dvandamena bhartha sarvabhutani sambhava. It is describing how all living beings are somehow or other under the influence of the material energy and are trying to enjoy the material energy. They're controlled by iccha and dvesa, by lust and envy. Yeah, the process of devotional service is very powerful. And even if mistakes are there within the process, still, because it is so potent, generally speaking, such mistakes will not become a permanent impediment. However, if one is committing Vaishnava aparad, or the mad elephant offense that can uproot our devotional creeper. Now, in the Bhagavad Gita, we find the verse in the second chapter, 240, Nehabikramunasasti pratyavayana vichyate svalpam api asya dharmasya drayate mahato bayat. And it is explained that there is no loss or diminution in the progress made from devotional service. Right? And then if you put right next to that the concept of the mad elephant offense, an offense that can uproot our spiritual progress, then there seems to be a contradiction in these two. And the question then may be raised, which of the two principles that are established here are prevalent? The acharyas have explained that although the result of Vaishnava aparad in particular is so serious that it can very much upset the progress we have made, it cannot permanently do so. So although this comparison is there of uprooting the creeper, it sort of hints that one permanently damages one's spiritual progress, and that is not the case. However, what is the case, it's more like the Neha Bikramo verse is sometimes compared to the spiritual bank balance, and that whatever is in our spiritual bank balance will accrue there over lifetimes and build up. So when we commit this Vaishnava aparad, then what happens is our bank account becomes frozen, basically. The account becomes frozen and we cannot access our assets, and we are as, and once again suddenly all our wealth is frozen, all our spiritual wealth is frozen, and we are again in an impoverished condition like a poor man. But when we are undergoing the reactions of that offense, then in due course of time one becomes purified. Just as we're seeing Daksha offended Lord Shiva, and then his head was exchanged for the head of a goat, which was a problem, and that problem stayed with him for an entire kalpa, which is a considerable amount of time, but at the end of that kalpa, Daksha is considered purified, and then he's reinstated. And then Daksha again is getting a prominent position, since he obviously was a great pious soul to start out with. We can see that Daksha is one of the mental sons of Brahma, one of these personalities who are extremely pious, powerful, and who are instruments of Brahma in completing the process of creation, which is not just, you know, done in one moment, in one instant, but also in steps and stages. So Daksha again will take a prominent role. Aswatthama also, right? Aswatthama, who killed the sleeping sons of Draupadi, and who in this way acted highly offensive, and being a brahmana, he was obviously meant to be very knowledgeable, so he was meant to be very much aware of what he was doing. Still, he acted in such an adharmic way, and therefore he also was getting a severe reaction for that heinous offense. But he also, after due purification, will again get a prominent position due to a pious soul. So these are some supportive stories to illustrate the point further, that the benefit of devotional service is eternal and cannot be destroyed. Nonetheless, we must be extremely careful about Vaishnava aparad. It is just the one thing. It is the one thing that can really upset all the progress that we are making. It is, even if otherwise we may not chant the best rounds, even if otherwise, but we are trying to chant the best rounds. But even in spite of trying, what comes out may not be the best. That may not be a major impediment, a major obstacle, if we're seriously trying. But that offense against the Vaishnavas, yes, that will set us back severely. So in this way, otherwise devotional service is such a powerful process that somehow or other will become transformed. After all, Krishna is truly all attractive, and devotional service is offering us that opportunity to act according to our constitutional position. It is stated that the word the point is that we are we're always in connection with Krishna. The process of devotional service is never a mechanical process. So it's not just the process itself that is purifying us. It is Krishna who is behind that process, and it is Krishna who is granting us spiritual advancement. He is the active agent. It is Krishna who grants love of God. It's not that by performing a certain amount of devotional service, a measurable degree of surrender, then automatically the result will be attained. That would make it a mechanical process. But it is not mechanical. It is very personal. Krishna becomes attracted by the service of the devotee. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta gave a nice translation of the name Krishna. And he said, so instead of the translation of all attractive, which we commonly hear, he gave the translation that Krishna is the one who is attracted by devotional service. Also a nice interpretation of the name Krishna. And both these elements are there within Krishna. Krishna is all attractive, but Krishna is also attracted by devotional service. Srila Jiva Goswami gives an explanation of the word Bhagavan. Krishna is Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he is explaining that the word Bhagavan can be divided up in three syllables, in Ba, Ga, and Va. And he says it stands for Bhajaniya Guna Vasista. And Bhajaniya Guna Vasista can be translated as he who is irresistible, you have to serve him. Yeah, that is Krishna. So that explains a little bit more about the all-attractive nature of Krishna. So basically, the process of devotional service which has been brought to us from collected by various acharyas from different scriptures. First of all, in the Narada Pancharatra, Narada Muni particularly collected instructions from various scriptures that established the principles of bhakti. And then we see that Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is doing the same thing. Again, a collection of various quotes about devotional service. And basically, then there is a process of bhakti One engages the senses in various ways in the service of Krishna. There's a description in the Nectar Devotion about Maharaj Ambarish, who is described as a Matpara devotee of the Lord, one who engages all his senses in the service of the Lord. He uses his legs to walk towards the temple. He uses his hands to cleanse the temple or do other services for the Lord. The eyes to see, the nose to smell, and so on. But everything related to the Supreme Lord. Mukundalingalaya. What is it again? Something like this. Engaging division in relating it to Krishna. Sarayamana Krishna Padaravindayo, fixing the mind on the lotus feet of Krishna. So in this way, engaging the mind and senses in relation to Krishna. And trying to act for the pleasure of Krishna. So instead of thinking about satisfying our senses, thinking about satisfying the senses of Krishna, and then automatically we become attracted to Krishna because he is bhajaniya guna vishishta. He's irresistible. You have to serve him. And the more we serve him, the more we will be drawn to serve him. Therefore, what is the result of devotional service? More devotional service. What is the result of chanting? More chanting. That also is the old example that blew the devotees' minds when they heard it for the first time. What is the result of chanting? So all this chanting, what does it lead to? More chanting, it goes on forever. So this is a fact. But not in the same way as it's going on now. Not in the way of struggle, but in the way of with more and more taste until we see. Rupa Goswami describes the name is dancing on his tongue and the Lord is dancing in the courtyard of his heart and so on. That is another level. That is the chanting of the Jivan Muktas. Whether they are still physically in the material world or not, they are already residents of the spiritual world. That is another level. But that is beginning already now. When we are looking at the Srimad Bhagavatam, it gives definitions of a Kanista Adhikari, a Madhyam Adhikari, and an Uttama Adhikari. And in the definition of the Madhyam Adhikari, it is said that there is Ishvarata Dadinesu Bali Seja Dvisatsucha Prema Maiti Kripu Peksha. It says, for Ishvara, for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Madhyam Adhikari has prema. He has love. So I find it significant that the word prem is used for the Madhyam Adhikari, because it's not the same level of Krishna prem that is referring to the prem of the Uttama Adhikari, which is free from any impediment. It is said for the Prema Bhakta, the Uttama Adhikari, the topmost Uttama Adhikari, because there are degrees of Uttama Adhikari. For the topmost Uttama Adhikari who reaches that level of Prema, there is no experience of any obstacle in this world. He is completely liberated in the true sense, because nothing is wrong. Nothing. There's no obstacle. Everything is perfect and everything is completely... he sees everything as the perfect arrangement of the Supreme Lord. It is said that... Then it is stated that by Srila Rupa Goswami that he says bhava is prema suryamsu. It is like a ray of the sun, just one ray, but it is of the same nature. It is of the same nature. So he says there's no difference between bhava and prema. So then the acharyas in their commentary are basically asking, Jiva Goswami is asking, why then make a distinction? And why then have three categories in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Sadhana Bhakti, Bhava Bhakti, and Prema Bhakti? Why? He says there is basically no difference. It's just a difference in terms of intensity. So what's already there in Bhav, the same kind of love, is just more intensified. It says like Bhava is described then like the first ray of sunlight in the morning, and full-fledged prema is described as the blasting sun at 12 noon. That's all. That's the only difference. But then, since the distinction is made, it's said because in this stage of bhava, there is still an experience of suffering. And there is still a sense of suffering in bhava. Or, of course, in the background. Of course, only from time to time. But there is some awareness of suffering in this material world. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that there is still a trace left of previous Vaishnava aparat. Right? That, like, some reactions of previous offense to Vaishnava is still affecting the person. And therefore, there is still an influence of suffering and so on. It's interesting how this contamination is then still working and gradually wearing out. While we're looking at such description of becoming liberated and such fine distinctions being made between bhava and prema and so on, and how we are making distinctions between madhyam adhikaris and uttama adhikaris, and then we we oftentimes see that people are making a big thing about the uttama adhikari, and they like that quote which is in the Nectar of Devotion on page 55, that the guru must be an uttama adhikari. Ha ha. However, when we start looking at definitions of what an uttama adhikari really is, then there is quite some variety. For example, the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, which gives that verse with the definition of uttama adhikari, doesn't give just one verse, gives like a whole series of verses. And those verses are more dealing with external behavior. They are saying one who behaves in a particular way is classified as an uttamakari. It doesn't speak about the condition of the heart. So we don't have to put the microscope on the heart to see if we can find a trace of some possible material influence there. Different acharyas put uttama adhikari on different levels. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is the most liberal one I ever found. In the Tattva Viveka, he already says at Ruchi one is classified as an uttama adhikari, right? Which others state at bhava, or again others say ashakti, whatever it may be. So there is a lot of nitpicking about these kind of classifications in cyberspace, for one thing, and also in corridors and other such such abodes where one shouldn't spend too much time. What can be said? So there's a lot of that around, and yeah, if you look at all that, I always look at these kind of quotes from Prabhupada about who came with a magazine called Back to Godhead, right? And who emphasized so much back to Godhead, and not Prema Pumartha Mahan. The ultimate goal of human life is to attain Krishna Prema. That was not something that Prabhupada said over and over and over. I mean, he quoted that, but not daily. But back to Godhead is something that was often mentioned, and he even named his magazine like that, which I often feel is kind of a long name for a magazine. Eh? I mean, yeah, like time, life, you know, one word, right? So you would have thought Godhead, you know? An editor would have said Godhead. Yeah. Back to Godhead is quite a long name for a magazine, but it is like a motto. Anyway, it is a motto, and Prabhupada put that in the front, back to Godhead, going back to Godhead, and not so much Krishna praying, because even if in this life we are not attaining Krishna Prem while we are in this body, if somehow or other Krishna is satisfied with our service, then one might go back to Godhead. Then we can argue exactly how also, but that's again another topic. Does it mean then that one first has to take birth in a universe where Krishna has his pastimes with the carbon? We have big discussions about that, as if it's any less, you know, as far as I'm concerned. When you are in a universe where Krishna is having his pastimes, that's good enough. Yeah? And then you go to the spiritual world after that. So I don't think you have to worry about these things. The point is that there is that mercy element, and the mercy element that in spite of the fact that we may not be 100% perfect, that there is hope. There is hope. Rupa Goswami describes it as asabandha, hope against hope. Jaipataka Maharaj told us that Prabhupada gave a lecture in Mayapur sitting on the Vyasasan, which had various steps going down, and that Prabhupada gave a lecture how if one wants to go back to Godhead, that one has to be 100% pure. I mean, one has to be a pure devotee. And many devotees felt a little bit like it was too difficult and somewhat discouraged. And then Prabhupada could see the mood. So as he got up and he went one step down, then he said, anyway, 90% will do. He came down another step, 80%. According to Jaipataka Maharaj, he stopped at 70%. And then threw his chadar over the shoulder and walked down. Maybe there were others who witnessed it too and have another memory of the situation that may happen. But anyway, that mercy element is there. It comes out again and again. It comes out when Prabhupada states four regulated principles, 16 rounds, and you'll go back to Godhead. I guarantee it. I guarantee it, I guarantee it. Dinabandhu, memories of Portland. There are many such things. There are statements where Prabhupada is speaking about Lord Brahma and Hiranyakasipu, and he says Lord Brahma gave this benediction. And because Lord Brahma gave the benediction, will not die inside, outside, not in the day, in the night, and so on, then Risi Uchu, the saintly person, has spoken, then the Lord upholds. the Lord upholds. And Prabhupada said, and therefore when the pure devotee says that if you chant 16 rounds, follow four regulated principles, you will go back to God, then you must go. Yeah, that is there in folio. So like that, there are so many of these wonderful quotes where you can see the mercy element coming in, and asabandha, hope against hope. Even if we are not perfect, there is hope. Not that you can bank on it and say, okay, then I'll do only half work and that will do. I'll do. No, as we try to do our very best, then hope against hope. I mention this more often because I operate on this. This is the foundation of my life. That's why I speak about this topic more often, because without it, no chance, no way that I'm ever going to make it. So hope against hope, that's that mercy element is very central in our movement. The mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. Not cheap, but when we endeavor to our max, then that mercy may come. Now is an opportune time. Some comments or questions.
To read the first sentence,
the first sentence of the verse or of the purport?
Yeah, verse. So it says that after many, many births, when the results of one's pious activities mature, one gets an opportunity to associate with pure devotees. So that reminded me of the of Prabhupada's statement that he created our good fortune.
Right.
And well, you spoke a lot about that, but it also. It appears that, I mean, what kind of pious activities can one have in this age?
Well, I try to explain three types, right? Karma-mukhi, moksha-mukhi, bhakti-mukhi. So one can have pious, there are pious activities. Plenty, you know, like even in this age, if you try to help other people, there is a certain... you know, certain piety in there. There are many pious people, many good-natured, nice, pious people who actually want to help others, who sincerely give donations, right, to the starving children in Ethiopia or God knows where they are starving these days. Things like that. These are pious people. These are nice people. These are people. And Krishna recognizes. You know, I was in Calcutta giving a morning lecture, the Bhagavatam lecture, and there was a doctor also in the lecture, and he was just a general practitioner. Now I know Calcutta, I spent lots of time in Calcutta, and I've seen these doctors, and I've seen how horrible the situation is that they're dealing with. I've seen that, like, they have waiting rooms, corridors, and even the garden full of patients, people with bloody bandages, and oh, I mean, you know, there's patients lying there, lying in the corridor. God knows what they have. People with feet just blown up, like, you know, this elephantitis and all kinds of horrible things. And these doctors, they sit there the whole day, from morning till night, 14 to 16 hours a day, just treating these patients. Right? So one of such doctors was sitting in the Bhagavatam class, and the verse was also something about piety, so at the end he made a comment, and he described how actually the devotees are much more pious than you know. They are doing the real welfare work and so on. I was thinking of all the devotees and how we would go and have some Mahaprasadam in the house of the Agarwals, you know, and then sign up another life member. And I was thinking that in terms of sacrifice, my God, you know, what a sacrifice this doctor is making. And let's see if any of us could put in that much service that and take so many hardships. So there are amazing people out there, amazing. I have more stories. One other short story, I sit on a plane and there's a couple sitting next to me. And they are, it's South Africa, and they are, he shows her pictures on his computer of a party. So I'm looking at him, I'm like, they're having a party and it's all there, you know, the bottles and the this and the that. And I go, God, look how degraded these people are in my mind, you know. God, color, a typical Kali Yuga thing, right? And then he shows something else, and he shows that he's a doctor who works in an AIDS hospital for children. And then he shows photos of the patients, and it's horrific, horrific mouths that are like raw on the inside. It's just a big wound, you know. And I thought, like, you know, after I saw those pictures, I thought, I've said in my mind, have another party. Have a party, you know. My God, you know, I would have one myself, right? You know, if I wasn't chanting Hare Krishna. My God, you know. There are lots of pious people out there. Lots of pious people. Lots of pious. With a little impiety mixed in. Well, Udvega Nadiba, for example, there are such statements. One should not cause any anxiety to any living being. So if we do so, there are also reactions. We should not. We should be ready to offer respects to all others. It doesn't say to all other devotees, to all others. Right? So there are plenty of injunctions that we should be not offend any living beings. But the reactions are different when we start to offend Vaishnavas. But yeah, we should not just stop with the Vaishnavas and then treat everyone else like dirt. No, we should be respectful to everyone.
With Vaishnava Prad is also by speech, but with Jiva Prad we may speak badly of Kamis. So I'm just gonna...
Well, sometimes a little bad is also all right. You know, Narottam Das Thakur also says that if we have anger, that we can direct it towards the non-devotee, not towards the devotee, to the non-devotee. So sometimes you have to call a spade, and call people nonsense rascals, which Prabhupada liked very much. And when Prabhupada said things like "I kick on their face," that was not offensive. That was appropriate. However, when we start imitating that, because we do not have the depth in vision, and we start imitating and left and right, kick this one on the face, and that one is a rascal, and this one is that, and then that may not be appropriate. So. Especially in the beginning, we must be very careful. When we become more mature, then we may be able to more clearly say who is at fault. Prabhupada, when Ram Rai, as an early editor of Back to Godhead, put a picture of a butcher slaughtering a cow on the front of the magazine, Prabhupada didn't like it. He said, "Why did you put it?" He said, "Like, well, this is an article against meat eating." Prabhupada said, we're not against anything. We're for Krishna. Yeah? So our emphasis is for Krishna and not to be against this and against that and against everything. But to rock the boat a little is also part of our movement. And yeah, as far as myself, I got a personal instruction of my spiritual master, who said, if no one gets upset about your lectures, then know that you're doing something wrong. So what to do? Sometimes I have to put a few in. It's just like that. Shall we end? I try to draw that line by making a distinction between this karma mukhi, moksha mukhi, and bhakti onmukhi. So all pious activities that are not related to Krishna can either give us heavenly planets, they can give us even temporary liberation, but they can never give us the eternal position of service to Krishna. Therefore, the real pious activities is the agyata sukriti, or are the pious activities that are offered by the devotees and by the Supreme Lord. Only that, only those, and nothing else. So the devotees make arrangements, so many arrangements. It's just Krishna makes arrangements. And in that way, one can begin without knowing it. Like in my case, you know, I saw the Hare Krishnas, but I thought, this is too extreme. I want a spiritual life, but something that was a little more, not so outlandish, right? So, and then in the days that I became interested or a little bit aware of them, more aware of them, yeah, I used to sometimes see them with wigs on the street, distributing books, so you could spot them, a guy with a wig, you could see it in a mile distance, right? So I would like, just with an ice cold face, walk past them, you know, like, they never stopped me. But then I got this girlfriend, and she had a dog, and the dog's name was Krishna. So then I was walking around at night with this dog, you know, and this dog would never come back, and I would just call, Krishna! So I started Harinam every night. Like, so the Agyata Sukriti was really working. And, my Vakma Padasha Kuru was a dog. So that's an example of it has to connect to Krishna in devotional service. We were going to a program in the Netherlands also, and we went by bus. There was a junkie, there's lots of them. He hit us up, you know, hey man, can you give us? Yeah. So I've been too long in India, so I learned these things, how to get rid of a beggar. So I got rid of him, and I had a new bhakta with me, and he calls him back. He said, hey, come back. He goes, oh no. And he brings him back. Then he pulls out of his pocket a little piece of apple from breakfast, all brown. He says to the junkie, open your mouth. And I don't know why he opened his mouth, if he was surprised of what it was, but he did open his mouth. And he popped the apple in there. Human births, guaranteed. This is the type of piety we're speaking of. He had no idea. He had low life all the way. But that little brown piece of apple, gave him so much piety. So it has to be connected to Krishna. Only then is it the kind of bhakti unmukhi. Now we will end. Thank you so much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.